Lord Vader, Operation Andor is underway.
Excellent. If we release 3 episodes per week, the Lorehounds will never be able to cover every episode. The Imperial forces will crush the rebellion before it begins.
Stand by. We're picking up something on our scanners.
Echo Squadron, reporting in.
Delta Squadron, on your left.
Django Squadron, on your 6.
With Imperial forces coming in fast, we're calling all Rebels to join the fight this season. Starting after the April 22nd premiere, you'll hear 3 full breakdowns for each week's episodes of Andor Season 2. Each podcast will be led by one of our squadron leaders, Alicia, David, and John. We'll be bringing in new and familiar voices to fill out the roster. Search for the Lorehounds on any podcast platform to join us in a galaxy far, far away. And don't forget to check out our season pass for even more content like our Holocron bonus pods. It's good news for anyone, except Darth Vader. Welcome to the Barry Podcast, where the Lorehounds, your guides to choosing a fast and furious film to drown out violent crimes in your vicinity. I'm John.
And I'm David, and this is our coverage of the HBO original series, Barry.
In this podcast, we'll be giving an overview of Season 4, Episode 7, A Nice Meal.
For early and ad-free access to our podcast and exclusive content, subscribe to the Lorehounds at patreon.com/thelorehounds. We're coming up on our one-year anniversary, and we'd love to hit 100 subscribers by the end of July. Everyone at the end of July who is subscribed is going to get a very cool limited edition thank you gift. Stick around to the end of the podcast for more notes about that. If Patreon isn't something you're interested in, but you still want to do something to share your appreciation, maybe consider leaving us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Go to our show page, scroll to the bottom, click on the stars, leave a comment. It doesn't even have to be a full sentence. The ratings and reviews really do help other people find our podcasts, and it helps us produce more content.
A quick reminder that for this season of Barry, we're doing a short form recap. So if you have comments on anything we didn't discuss, send us feedback for the next episode.
Send emails to lorehounds@thelorehounds.com. Or head over to our website, and there you can either use our cool, nifty voicemail feature or the plain, vanilla, boring contact form. You can also post a message on our Discord server. We've got a very active community, lots of fun folks chatting a lot about different shows. There's a link in the show notes and also on our website.
All right, David, give me your overall thoughts for the penultimate episode of Barry.
I have, what it did Bill Hader, they did like somebody crack him over the skull and they're like dumping out all the weird, strange cinemophile, you know, thoughts and fantasies and dreams. And this is a show that I would never have expected to go in the direction that it's gone. I think we said that on the last couple of podcasts.
Yeah.
And it keeps going that direction. And I'm like, Lordy. But it's excellent. It's horrific. It's hilarious. It's visually beautiful. Some of the decisions that he is doing, like the steady or the locked off cameras, you know, with a very fixed, you know, they set up in the kitchen, right? And they're just there. The camera doesn't move.
Yeah.
All the action is on the actor. It's a really brave thing to do in this modern day of having steady cams and the snap zooms,
right,
and all of that stuff. Right. So I'm really glad he's sticking to his whatever his visual style language is. I really like to see it in this full form. The color palette is really interesting. It's a very desaturated look to things, which makes it very simple and also gives it this gothic horror tone to it. Mm-hmm. Sarah Goldberg as Sally is killing it in this, just incredible. So yeah, I don't know where this show is going to end up. I don't know how we're going to end up. I have a theory though. I don't know when we can get to it. Did you hear the end credits?
Yeah, there was a audio a whole thing. Yeah, a whole thing from the football game.
So I wonder, and I listened to it with the subtitles on, and there's a few things in there that I was wondering if those are those little hints that he's dropping for.
Could be
the finale. I don't know.
Why don't we save that for the end?
Okay. So where are you at? Because you're a big Barry stan. You have been for a long time.
I love
time.
Barry.
Is this show doing what you need it to do for you?
Yeah. I mean, again, I would not have predicted any of this came
Nothing
to happen.
Of this.
By the end of the episode, I was like, "What the hell is happening?" And yet, it was great, right? I mean,
right, exactly.
But that's the kind of twist that you want. You look back and you're like, "Oh, that makes total sense." Because I was thinking last season, you know. Doesn't really make sense that Gene got away with taking $250,000 and nobody said anything. Nobody caught that he paid in cash for a house.
Right.
But I guess somebody was paying attention. Jim Moss was.
Well, eventually. And, it took him a minute.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's pretty interesting to see this finally come to fruition. I think a lot of threads have been running for a long time and they're finally getting tangled. Mm-hmm. And they're finally coming
to their
end.
That's a good way to put it. Instead of becoming untangled, they're getting tangled. Yeah, for sure.
Right. And also, I gotta say, I think Bill Hader is a brilliant actor.
Yeah.
I love everything he does with Barry. I love everything he's done with that. Anything I've ever seen him in. SNL, The Skeleton Twins, excellent movie. You know, he has such a range. But I'm almost more excited to see his future as a director and a writer than I am as an actor. I think that he has a huge future in showrunner kind of careers. And I'm really excited to see that.
Wasn't he, I don't know where I heard this, and I may have mentioned it last episode, isn't he a bit of a film buff?
Yeah.
And he grew up just consuming a lot of film, I think I did mention this in a previous podcast, and then it was easier for him to get into TV than it was into film. Yeah.
Well, do you know how he got found?
No, not at all.
It's a really good story, and I would recommend, I'll find a link to it and I'll link it. I think it's called In Bed with Nick and Megan. It's Nick Offerman and Megan Mullally, who are married.
Okay.
They do a podcast from their bedroom where they call people from their bedroom and they just interview them.
All right.
And they interviewed him, and apparently Megan Mullally went to a community theater, not community, it was like middle tier theater, you know, middle tier theater things where Nick Offerman's brother, her husband's brother, was in a cast, and Bill Hader was in that cast. And she said Bill Hader just blew her away with his performance.
Uh-huh.
And she called Lorne Michaels that day. Mind you, she had never spoken with him before. She had no relationship with him. She called him and said, "Hello, it's Megan Mullally. I need you to hire Bill Hader for SNL." And he goes, "Who are you? But fine, he can come for an audition." And that's how he got on SNL, is Megan Mullally went to her brother-in-law's show and happened to see Bill Hader. It was complete luck.
That's wild. And there's a way that you get on SNL. You know, there are approved pathways for you to audition and do all these things. And Lorne Michaels, I mean, Lord, that guy has, how much talent has he, you know, shepherded and fostered and found and have put in front of him? If some rando calls you up out of nowhere and says, "This person," that's amazing.
Well, she did have a decent amount of pull. You know, that was the peak. You know, she was big in Will and Grace. She's had a big career. She's had a big career in comedy, especially.
Fair enough.
So I think
that's true.
She had some weight to throw around, and she did so on behalf of Bill Hader, who she had never met before this thing, you know, which is incredible. So I'm glad that she made that call, because boy, oh boy, are we in for a treat with this finale.
It'll be curious to see which direction Hader breaks too. Does he keep going into television? Will HBO, you know, I mean, obviously we have a writer strike that I feel is going to go on for a while, which is a little bit nerve-wracking for all the folks and, you know, all the creatives and all the grips and the gaffers and the food truck folks and everything like that. It's really going to suck. It's going to really hit a lot of people because these studios are... Yeah, they don't.
But never fear, folks. We've diversified. We're doing books and video games. You can't even get enough of it.
Well, anyway, that said, yeah, it'll be interesting to see which way he breaks, cinema or TV or both. Does it matter anymore?
Right.
I don't know. That's a good question.
Right.
So,
yeah,
but I want to see more from him as a director, as you say.
Definitely.
As a showrunner and a director, I'm definitely into it.
Well, let's see next week if he can stick the landing. For now, why don't we get into the episode?
Well, I hope he's got more than one rocket in his launcher.
It's going to be a 35-minute episode, so
okay.
I have no idea how they're going to wrap it up in 35 minutes. But
that is so short. Well, I was just like, well, they're normally 30 minutes, and he's got an extra 5 minutes. So, yeah, right. That's going to be amazing for Barry. Right? I mean, could you imagine an hour-long Barry? That would be...
I mean, I would love it.
It would break my brain.
No, I think they could have done with longer episodes, but I appreciate that Bill Hader sticks to his guns.
Right, right. He's and just being able to pack that much into such a short time frame, it's incredible.
Right.
So, okay. All right, let's get to it.
Let's get into our plot lines. I've got four here. I tried to do it in three, and again, it was just too much. I think we've got four threads going for the rest of this series.
We adapt to the story.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, well, absolutely.
It's up to the story.
So let's do Hank and Fuchs first. Mm-hmm. Hank hires the Fubox, which is the four ultimate badass killers, to kill the Raven Gang, only to receive their heads back in boxes. The Raven and his merry men debate how to best shield Fuchs's girlfriend and her daughter from traumatic experiences with Fast and Furious. Hank takes matters into his own hands and unsuccessfully shoots a missile at Fuchs's house, which leads to a shootout. On a mission to appease Fuchs, Hank kidnaps Sally and John outside Gene's house and tells Barry to come meet him. Wow. What a what a sequence.
I like the fact that Hank's staff are very budget conscientious. I appreciate that.
Yeah, but you apparently know, on the wrong things.
Right,
I meant
exactly.
Office supplies.
The way he was holding the rocket with his little fingers and stuff. That was brilliant. That was a really excellent way to bring these two forces into direct conflict, but then have a indeterminate resolution from it. So there's a scene, and I'm not sure exactly which one it is, but Hank is in the office and he's talking to his two henchmen. And he does this really great body turn where his shoulders twist and then his head twists and then he walks forward. And Anthony Carrigan's presence in this character is so phenomenal.
Yeah.
And he is charming and hilarious with the corporate speak, the quip of what does EOD mean? Oh, by end of day. And he's like, well, you're not special forces like, you know, these guys are or something. And it's like, no, Hank, that is like a normal corporate, acronym. And so they're playing the line between the corporate and the gangster and the sort of almost naive, kind of like unaware of certain business practices. And Kerrigan's performance just is so masterful at capturing that complexity. And even to the point of Hank is so damn charming that he makes friends with some little lady who lives down the canyon from where this gun battle happened.
It's Mrs. Phoebe. Let's be nice to her.
And he's all beat up and everything. And she's, completely lovely to him. And so
notice that the cola that she gave him ends up with John at the end?
No.
Because, he keeps trying to pass it off.
Yeah,
I guess it just ended up with John.
Oh, my Lord. So.
Poor John.
Yeah. And so just great stuff. I don't know. What did you take away from this part?
There was something that was said on Reddit, and I don't know who. Sorry. But it really highlighted to me what makes Barry special. And they said, think about how this was the same kind of car shootout scene that we saw in season one with Taylor and the other combat buddy with Barry.
Uh-huh.
When they're driving up super fast and Taylor gets killed and they're all in this like horror situation. And that was like a horrible terror situation and everybody's scared for the characters. And yet this is basically the same thing happening and it's a comedy. because of the way that they framed it.
Right.
Because you have this phone call happening between Fuchs and Hank, where Hank is just freaking out and Fuchs is like, "You're next." And just him like dodging bullets and jumping off the hill. I mean, it's so funny. Meanwhile, it could have been terrifying if you were close up with Hank.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that is the brilliance of this show, is it can be dramatic when it needs to, and it could be thriller when it needs to, and it can be a comedy when it needs to, all with the same set pieces.
Right.
It's incredible. And I love that Bill Hader is able to turn these scenes on their head and sort of use it as a prism, right? He's got his little prism and he keeps turning it and letting you mm-hmm. see the different right. ways this scene can look from different angles.
Right.
And it's the same thing of last season. Remember, there was that chase with the bikers and Barry's, you know, on top of the car sales lot. And it's a mass shooting, right? There's a shooting at a public place. It's terrifying in real life. And they have this comedy routine of, where'd he go? And this guy comes out with a gun and shoots the biker. And it's crazy. This show does such a good job of just making you laugh at violence in a way that feels natural. But then you go, oh, I just laughed at that.
Right. The forehead scenes. Why do I keep opening these boxes? And then we get to the last guy and he's like, oh, even in death, he's still a looker, right?
He's still a fox.
That's the line.
He had another great line about that guy.
Yeah.
The guy goes, 500 confirmed kills. He goes, make that 501.
One. So great. Right. And here we have, that's it, right? You know, there's the Fubooks, right?
Yeah.
They're you know, wreaking death and destruction on the world. And here Hank has a crush on one of them and plays it up all sexy. Right. And so we have in this moment, comedy, romance, and sort of horror all thrown into one. The boxes with the little blood-soaked, stained corners. I don't know if you noticed that.
Yes.
Right? This is a great visual reference. That's horrific. That is terrible. There are heads, human heads in those boxes, leaking all of their bodily fluids into the bottom of that cardboard on that desk. And yet that scene is hilarious.
And yet, I don't know if it's the most funny scene in this sequence, because the scene of arguing over which Fast and Furious movie to show these women really good. So that they don't get traumatized by beheadings.
And it's
what
great.
What was that?
Fast and Furious just dropped, right? The most recent movie is out, so that was a perfect. I don't know. There's no way they could have timed that way. It had to.
No. I think it just was. Well, I think of franchises that are continuing, that's a pretty safe bet,
right? But that it opened this weekend, is a big deal.
No way they could have timed that. You're right.
And again, going back to the camera technique, the cinematography technique that he's got. He sets those guys all up there perfectly in that frame. The camera doesn't move.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't give us an excuse to be distracted or look somewhere else. It's not drawing our attention anywhere else. And so we're just left with, have you ever done one of those exercises where you just stare into somebody else's eyes and you just
get, I've been to a fair.
Okay.
I've been to an art convention.
You've been on the subway in New York City in rush hour.
Oh, you don't make eye contact.
No, you do not make eye contact. No. Thank God we can wear masks now without shame on a New York City subway. Anyway, we're left just to confront everything that is there in front of us. And so all of the comedy, all of the drama has to come from those people. There's nothing else to distract us. And so to see the raven with his wings.
That's a good point.
In the middle, and he's got that big bird chest tattoo on his chest.
Yeah,
and then when the dude pops up and he's like in Spanish, and he's like, "Look, you guys are arguing over stupid stuff. We've got to focus on his love here and her daughter. Right. Like, knock it off with Fast and Furious."
Right, but the one guy who had the idea of why don't I go take them out for a nice meal. He was right in the end, because they load them up into the Suburban, they're gone, and all of a sudden they're back, and the bombing happens without them.
In a business meeting where you've had that sort of like, well, we should be brainstorming, but nobody's quite comfortable, and you get these awkward suggestions that start side fights, and it's like, I've been in that corporate meeting before, so they're really playing with that whole
right.
organizational structure stuff at the same time.
Yeah, and again, it's just this thing that Barry does where it makes you look at a criminal situation as normal people because they
right.
probably are normal people in a lot of their interactions. They just are doing heinous things
right.
with regular situations.
I loved the rocket shot too at the house.
Yeah, yeah.
And it just, life goes astray sometimes. Like your best intentions don't always, you know, land. And
well, so I don't know if that was the best intention. I think that was,
well,
there
you
pretty,
know what I mean?
Pretty bad intentions there.
Your focused intention, yeah, what you want to achieve just doesn't happen. So that was brilliant. So yeah, all good stuff. I'm really curious to see where we end up with Fuchs. And Fuchs has become
he's a threat,
real dangerous character now.
Yeah, yeah. Which is,
he was always
surprising,
kind of bumbling before, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was always a joke. He was always mm-hmm. just incompetent, waiting for Barry to do something for him, or lucking out, paying somebody, offering to mentor somebody, something like that. He would always
right.
he was a talker. He was a good talker.
Right.
But he was a terrible criminal.
Crime
otherwise.
Lord. Yeah. A crime boss. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, 8 years of prison changed him. Why don't we see what 8 years on a kibbutz did to Gene?
Go for it.
After publishing a website dedicated to stopping the Barry movie, Gene receives a call offering Daniel Day-Lewis to come out of retirement and play him. Meeting with the agent, Gene learns that Mark Wahlberg is interested in playing Barry, but doesn't want to play a cop killer. After defending Barry's character, Gene is brought to an intervention where Jim Moss and the prosecutor accuse him of conspiring with Barry to murder Janice. Wow, did you see this coming, David?
No, and I love that the way that how they dangle Daniel Day-Lewis in front yes. of Gene is what yeah. gets him to change his mind. That was so yeah. inspired. And I heard there was some news about Daniel Day-Lewis just the other day.
They're really,
what it was.
Know, they're becoming the Simpsons. They're just predicting everything.
He's so, well, I don't know how, yeah, Hader must be, he has the pulse or he has a sense of Hollywood to such yeah. a degree that yeah. he's able to write these jokes and they're not far off the mark.
Right.
So, and I love the comment about, you know, the whole, you know, Hollywood is a whore sort of thing that has been a
yeah.
constant yeah. trope that's been used. So he, you know, pulled that one out and what happens to Gene? He, you know, you dangle the right thing in front of him, the right,
right
shiny object in front of him, and he crumbled.
Here's what I really liked about Gene's downfall.
Mm-hmm.
And again, he didn't do anything wrong other than take the money. So I don't love that he's actually being accused of conspiring in the murder, although he should get a penalty for taking $250,000
right.
from Wyatt. But what I love about Gene's downfall is that he had two opportunities to do right by his students and avoid the situation. One, he could have picked up Sally
mm-hmm,
and not right. gone to the meeting.
Right.
Two, he could have recognized his student who was paid to be the fake agent.
Right.
And so both times his vanity and his unwillingness to put others in front of himself and his lack of true caring for his students is what led to his downfall.
Interesting. I didn't think about that. That's so his time on the kibbutz and doing his little meditation and stuff, it's superficial.
Yes.
He's sort of calmed his outward demeanor.
Right.
But inside, he's still the same vain, shallow, ego-driven person.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
He learned nothing,
right?
Like most of the characters in this show.
So in your description, you call it an intervention.
Yeah, I mean, he walks into the room. It's a crime intervention.
It's hilarious. I didn't even think of it. I love your description of it because they're all sitting there. It's not, you know, slap, slap, put the cuffs on, you know,
right.
you have the right to remain silent. You know, he's not being charged. But yet they're law enforcement. The district attorney, the police chief, you know, they're all staring at him saying, but they don't have evidence.
They're like, what an asshole, basically.
Right. So where does it go with him after this?
Well, they do have evidence that he took
money. He had $250,000.
So
yeah,
right. he was at least an accessory after the fact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they could do the money. You'd have to trace the money.
Right. Yes. But how easy is that? He bought a house with it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's totally.
And he has his son testifying. His son's involved. And his son is saying, you wouldn't tell me where the money was from. Clearly, this was it. You have the reporter who Gene told he took the $250,000. Now, Gene has said in front of the prosecutor, he took the $250,000. And Barry said to Jim, the $250,000.
Right.
And I do like that the reporter thing came back. It wasn't just, you know, it wasn't just a one-off. It was, he got some information out of him. He needed to corroborate it.
Right.
And he finally did.
And real estate transactions are one of the most well-documented sort of transactions that you can have in modern life. Yeah. So that's easy to find the money. You know, I've been in a room with Mark Wahlberg twice.
Oh.
I did this weird side gig where I would go to press screenings on the East Coast for foreign journalists. This guy in LA would have me go because he didn't want to travel because of family reasons. So I was his stringer. That's sort of, I think, the quasi-industry term for what I was doing. And I was in a press room. I was with like three or four other reporters. And we were with several people from, what was the Navy SEAL movie that Mark Wahlberg was in about Afghanistan?
I know very little about Mark Wahlberg.
Okay. Anyway, and so we interviewed, you know, it was a press, you know, we would jump from hotel room to hotel room interviewing different pods of the actors. And then I was on another one, what was actually on camera. I still have the memory card around somewhere. It didn't air, but I was just doing the interviews. Yeah, so it was with Mark Wahlberg and Will Ferrell for Daddy's Home, the really bad comedy about, you know, divorced dads or whatever. So yeah, I had this weird opportunity twice to interview Mark Wahlberg. And yeah, that was weird.
Was he a nice guy?
You know, these are press junkets. So
they're already cranky.
Yeah, they're cranky, but they have to be nice. Having them put the thing about Wahlberg not wanting to play a cop killer, I was like, oh yeah, that's totally on point. I could totally see Wahlberg doing that. And then the guy that the actor who was playing the agent, he's like, no, in fact, he's actually afraid of the forest. You've got to come to this hotel. Yeah. Brilliant. Really, he's really nice. Yeah. And he did a really good job. It was perfect. So
I think that's pretty funny, too, because Mark Wahlberg just starred last year in Uncharted with Tom Holland. Mm-hmm. And that is entirely in like ruins that are forested. So if Gene had any idea what Mark Wahlberg had done recently and had not been so self-absorbed, he might have caught that, too.
Caught that line. I did like the line, though, that he's like, is this Tony Danza trying to prank me? That's a good deep cut. That's a very deep cut. From Happy Days days.
Okay. I didn't catch that.
Tony Danza played Chachi in Happy Days. And he was a cool kid that was around Richie Cunningham. I think he was dating Richie Cunningham's sister, if I remember.
All right. We're getting out of old man mode.
Hey man, this is your legacy. This is your television legacy.
I don't want that. So, what I want is Sally and John, and I want their story.
Let's move along then.
Arriving in LA, Sally asks Gene to pick her up from the airport, but he goes to meet Lewis's agent instead. Sally and John arrive at Gene's empty house, and Sally reflects on going back home to do the same thing she's been doing. Seeing a police officer, she attempts to turn herself in, but a hallucination prevents her. After being kidnapped by Hank, she asks Barry for help. This hallucination, I think that confirms that what we saw last episode was a hallucination as well.
I was getting, I didn't check too wide of a media scope, but certainly on our Discord server, there was a couple of folks who were confused.
Yeah.
I think I was on the initial watching of this. So, this definitely confirms in my mind that Sally's having a real hard time separating reality, her reality from her, you know, it's kind of like the Raven, I guess, who is that author? Come on, David. My old man brain is getting bad.
That's all right.
The knock, knock, knocking, the heart underneath the...
Yeah, Edgar Allan Poe.
Thank you, Poe. But it's kind of like that. She's got this guilty conscience inside of her that is warping and bending her perceptions of reality. And she's so disassociated. She so hates being a parent. She's so...
Yeah, she does.
Right. How much, you know, what kind of buzz is she riding on? Well, you know, maybe she wasn't drinking too much on the flight over, but she had been back home, so...
Okay, so let me ask you this. Was she going to take John with her if she went with the police officer?
Well, I think she was
going to hope that he was going to stay with Jean.
No, I think he was. She was going to turn herself in, and they would all get scooped up and you know, go into the system, as it were, and sort of end the nightmare. Yeah. And you know, John probably, you know, put into foster care and sent off and all of that kind of stuff. So.
Yeah, it's such a shame. I mean, I don't think they have any evidence to link Sally to anything. The only thing that she could be, you know, getting into trouble for is staying with Barry. But the murder, it wasn't even murder. It was more self-defense. And then maybe she took it too far. But it was more self-defense with the killing that she did in the season finale of season 3. I don't think they have evidence of that. I mean, Barry successfully hid that body. We haven't seen any reason to believe that they found it or that they linked it to his apartment or anything like that.
Yeah, he would have to go. She would have to go. She'd have to give all that evidence and they'd have to find something real.
Yeah.
They'd have to find a blood stain or the weapon or
from
something like that.
Ago.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, she's tied up with Jean Cousineau and Barry. And they're both highly wanted and sought after. Yeah. So, yeah, she'd get pulled into it. I don't know where they would end up, you know. Right.
Honestly, with someone like her, they might have her be a witness and, you know, basically plead almost nothing in exchange for being a witness against the other two. Link them
right.
to the crime.
That would be a good way to angle it if you were a prosecutor.
And maybe that's where we'll end. And maybe Sally's fate is to, her punishment is to be with John and just... to live her boring life.
She clearly is not. She's putting no effort into being a parent.
No.
And is.
But will she change actively, if she gets out of the habit of relying on Barry? That's the question.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I have very little hope for this kid.
Nor Sally. I don't see a redemption pathway for Sally out of this. We've seen her family life, her mom and dad. Her professional acting career is over.
Yeah.
And she's got nothing and Barry, and that's it. So where does she go from here? What's her pathway out of this? I don't see where there is a pathway.
No. What a shame.
Well, unless she becomes like a HR, you know, trainer for NoHo Hanks corporation, right? Doing leading seminars and in terms of effective communication among gangsters in the corporate world.
Well, let's see if Hank gets to ride off into the sunset like he wants to in this finale.
Right.
All right. Let's close it out with Barry. It's a short one. In an interrogation-induced dream sequence, Barry admits to giving Jean $250,000, confirming Jim Moss's prior lead from the journalist. Barry escapes his imprisonment and calls Sally only to be connected with Hank. Hank tells Barry to meet him at an address. Here's my question to you, David. What address did he give him? Did he give him the corporate address?
Did
he give him Fuchs's address?
Uh-huh. Oh, I like that. I didn't even think about that. My first thought was to the corporate address, but that was the first thought, but then it didn't. I was like, that doesn't make sense. But putting Barry and Fuchs in a direct collision course, that's a smart play on Hank's part, for sure. Because hopefully, either, you know, one taking out the other or canceling each other out, or in the process, you know, one is so wounded or ruined. Yeah. So, no, I think that's a smart play.
Yeah, I could see it going two ways. I could see either he sends him there as basically an offering to Fuchs.
Mm-hmm.
Or,
which is what Fuchs wanted from the beginning.
Right, and he did say you know, we're trying to appease Fuchs now. That's their goal.
Right.
Now.
That's the phase. That what phase of the war are we in? We're in the phase Fuchs of
whatever the fuck he wants. He said, yeah. So that's one option. And the other is send Barry to him. He goes, well, maybe I can just get Barry to take these guys out.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's kind of done with that. I think he's kind of done with that style. He does not trust Barry anymore. So I like the idea of him going to Fuchs. And I think that they're much more evenly matched than the last time they met. So I'm really excited to see that showdown. I hope it's emotional. I hope it's not just a fight.
Right. Yeah. Rather. Yeah. Like there's actual confrontation and there's actual resolution. Yeah. Do you think Hank would call Fuchs to say that Barry's on the way? Get ready for him. Or would he just send him there?
Good question. I don't know. If I were Hank, I might just send Barry there and say, well, whoever wins, I'm going to pretend I was on their side.
we know that Barry, prior to this, had a single mission, which is to kill Gene.
Right.
And I think the only thing that he would want to do now is save John.
Yeah.
So,
and Sally. I do think he still cares for Sally.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. John would be his priority. Sally would be number two. We'll have to see how that all starts to shake out. So,
yeah. All right, David, any other thoughts on this episode before we head into our last couple sections?
Yes, I made a very bad mistake just a few minutes ago, and I'm trying to stave off the volume of email that we will get.
Tony, probably already sent one.
Yeah. Yes, it's already done. The email is already on its way, unless you have the undo feature in your Google Mail or something like that. Tony Danza was in his big television role was in Taxi as Tony Banta, and Chachi was played by Scott Baio, and I confused the two, but you can forgive me because they have very similar hairstyles and they're both swarthy men of the 70s and the 80s. So in my addled brain, my tired brain state, I confused the two. I apologize to anyone who was unintentionally riled up or sent an email.
You know, so, I'll never forgive you for besmirching the good name of Tony Danza.
You didn't even know who he was.
I didn't.
So I think with that last thought, I think we can wrap it up.
Very cool. All right. So we have no feedback this week.
Nope.
And that's a shame because this is the penultimate episode, but you've got one more chance to get in. Yeah, I know. People are watching. People are listening. So I hope people will write in for the finale. I would
that'd be
love
great.
To hear people's thoughts on the conclusion of this show.
An entire series wrap too, not just season four, but the entire four seasons. So yeah, send us your thoughts.
Yeah. Again, lorehounds at thelorehounds.com, or you can head to thelorehounds.com. There's a contact form there. You've also got a voicemail feature, so you can just chat with us. If you don't want to type, that's fine. You could be like Barry. Remember in season three, he's in the store. He's just reading text speech. I feel like you could do that. That would be fun.
That's right.
All right, David, let's do our Patreon shout outs here. You want to give it a shot?
Sure. Samartian, Cyrus, Mark H, Michael G, Michelle E, David W, Brian P, Nick W, SC, Peter OH, Bettina W, Adam S, Nancy M, Lavinia T, Duve 71, Brian 8063, Frederick H, Sarah L, Gareth C, Eric F, Matthew M, Sarah M, and DJ Miwa. Thank you all very much for being Lore Master Patreon supporters. Thank you to all our Patreon subscribers. I don't know. We say this every time and we continue to say it. Your guys' support helps keep the podcast wheels turning. Everyone who is a subscriber at any level through the end of July will get a special commemorative thank you sticker. I'm just about to put the final touches on the draft. And once we have that, we'll send out a email to everyone. We'll probably post it on our website so for folks to take a look at. But if you are interested in supporting us, we're trying to get 100 subscribers by the end of July, our one-year anniversary or one-year birthday, if you want to look at it that way, is July 11th, and it would really be a great thing for us to break through that 100 subscriber barrier. So more on that later. But again, thank you to everyone.
Yes, thank you, everyone. So let's do some programming notes here. We've got just a week of May left, but we've still got more coming at you. We just recorded and released The Tombs of Atuan, our third Book Nook episode on the second book of the Earthsea Cycle.
Yes, that, isn't that confusing?
I know. The second copy of the second will. If you've watched The Grand Budapest Hotel, that's a big joke, and I always think of that when I list too many numbers. Anyway, we just released the Tombs of Atuan podcast with Marilyn Arpukila. It was 2 hours and 10 minutes in the final cut.
How was the edit for that? Was that long?
It was not a short edit, but it was not too bad either.
Okay, good. And we're getting better. We're getting more professional.
Yes, we're getting a little speedier on those edits. But anyway, it was a great conversation. I mean, we talked very deeply about patriarchy and second wave feminism,
right?
In this book, I mean, it was so detailed. I really enjoyed that conversation, and it went like several layers deep into this book.
Nice.
And I hope you enjoy that. We're going to keep going on that series. We're definitely going to at least do through book 4 and maybe beyond. I just saw a Discord message a little while ago. Somebody said, "Hey, could you please do the rest of them?" I think maybe. Also, MC Universe is back in town again, coming up next week with Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse prep. You, David, are going to be talking with John and Alicia about the new Spider-Man movie.
Yes.
And what's going to be happening in the Spider-Verse multiverse. I don't really understand what's happening in that universe, but
have you seen the first movie?
I have not.
Dude. Oh, my Lord. I have not seen it, and I have heard people consistently say it's one of the best animated movies. It's the best superhero movie.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, oh, okay, cool. That's great. You know, and I was always thinking, well, it'll be top shelf MCU.
Yeah.
No. This is next level. This is an completely different.
Wow.
This is minor leagues to major. This is T-ball to, you know, World Series baseball. It is an entirely different level of show. The animation style had blew me away. I just watched it the other day in prep for this, and I had never seen the first one. It is phenomenal, and so I am super hyped for Across the Spider-Verse to see what they do, given the time and the budget and the creative license that they have to be able to take this out. So, Jean and Alicia and I are going to talk about the first movie. We're going to talk about Spider-Man in general. We're going to talk about some production details and what we know about the upcoming movie. So it should be a good podcast. I'm really looking forward to it because both Jean and Alicia have. Alicia knows a lot of the more modern movie stuff. Jean is deep in the comics. So I think it's going to be a really interesting conversation. So
cool.
Yeah.
Well, we've got a couple more notes for the rest of the month. We just brought on a new network affiliate, Alicia, and we are very happy to have her. She's doing a weekly podcast on Silo, the new science fiction dystopian weird Mystery show box. On Apple TV Plus. It's so good. It's so weird. I can't wait to find out what's going on in this Mystery Box show. It feels like early Lost. You know, we got a lot of threads going, and we got to figure out where they're going.
Chernobyl and Westworld elements as well. So very cool. Yeah.
Yeah. And Alicia and Luke are doing a great job breaking that down. So please head over to their feed. It's in the show notes if you want to check it out. Give them a rating and review. Give them a listen. We are very happy to have them. And lastly, next week, we're going to have an episode of Silmarillion Stories out. We're going to be reading of Eldamar and the Princes of the Idalia, which say that 10 times fast.
I cannot.
And we are having Aaron from Lore of the Rings, that's another Tolkien podcast, on to talk with us about that. Thanks, everyone, for listening. I'm really looking forward to catching up with everyone on the finale of Barry, the whole deal finale, the whole show finale of Barry.
It's crazy. The end of May, Barry, White House Plumbers, Ted Lasso, Succession, Yellow Jackets, they're all ending together at the end of May. Yep. It's bizarre. So, but yeah, I think we're going to spend some time with that podcast. So definitely send in your feedback for the series, for the season, and for the series overall.
Yep. All right. We'll see you next week.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.
Lord Vader, Operation Andor is underway.
Excellent. If we release 3 episodes per week, the Lorehounds will never be able to cover every episode. The Imperial forces will crush the rebellion before it begins.
Stand by. We're picking up something on our scanners.
Echo Squadron, reporting in.
Delta Squadron, on your left.
Django Squadron, on your six.
With Imperial forces coming in fast, we're calling all Rebels to join the fight this season. Starting after the April 22nd premiere, you'll hear 3 full breakdowns for each week's episodes of Andor Season 2. Each podcast will be led by one of our squadron leaders, Alicia, David, and John. We'll be bringing in new and familiar voices to fill out the roster. Search for the Lorehounds on any podcast platform to join us in a galaxy far, far away. And don't forget to check out our season pass for even more content like our Holocron bonus pods. It's good news for anyone, except Darth Vader.